This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Sean Penn is starring in two new movies. Neither is typical Hollywood fare. He plays a sergeant in the World War II movie The Thin Red Line. It's director Terrence Malick's first movie in about 20 years. The story follows an army rifle company that's sent to the South Sea island of Guadalcanal, which has been invaded by the Japanese. In this scene, Penn's character, Sergeant Edward Welsh, is reprimanding a soldier in his company, Private Witt, played by Jim Caviezel. Private Witt is back in the company after having gone AWOL.
Truth is, you can't take straight duty in my company. You'll never be a real soldier. Not in God's world. This is C Company, of which I'm first sergeant. I run this outfit. Now, Captain Starles, he's the CO. But I'm the guy who runs it. Nobody's gonna foul that up. You're just another mouth for me to feed. Normally, you'd be court-martialed. But I worked a deal for you. You ought to consider yourself lucky. I'm sending you to a disciplinary outfit. You'll be a stretcher bearer. You'll be taking care of the wounded.
I can take anything you dish out. I'm twice the man you are.
Sean Penn's other new movie, Hurly Burly, is based on a play by David Rabe. It's about three friends in Hollywood and their relationships with women. In this scene, Penn has learned that his roommate, played by Kevin Spacey, has spent the night with Penn's girlfriend. Here's Penn and Spacey on the telephone.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not claiming any reprehensible behavior on anybody's part.
I mean, we're all sophisticated people. Darlene and I certainly had no exclusive commitment to each other of any kind whatsoever, blah, blah, blah.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. Right.
Well, there's no confusion here, Mickey. Just have a little empathy, for Christ's sake. I mean, I bring home this very special lady to meet my best friend, my roommate.
Eddie, why do we have to go through this?
I'm just trying to tell a story here, Mickey. Nobody's to blame. Certainly not you. I mean,
you came to me. You had experienced these vibes between yourself and Darlene. Isn't that what you said?
Yeah, but couldn't you have said no? Couldn't you have categorically, definitively said no when I asked? But you said...
Eddie, you said everybody's free, Mickey. I mean, that is what you said.
Look, I just want to verify for you, Mickey. Everybody is free.
So what's this, then?
You mean this conversation?
Yeah.
This is just me trying to maintain a, you know, viable relationship with reality. Okay, I want to make sure I haven't drifted off into some solitary paranoid fantasy system of my own totally unfounded and idiosyncratic invention.
I want to be in reality, you know? Don't you want me to be in reality? Personally, I want us both to be in reality. Come on!
Well, absolutely, that's what I want, Eddie. I want us both to be in reality, absolutely.
Sean Penn, welcome to Fresh Air. I want to talk first about your new movie, Hurly Burly. The story is set in Hollywood. You play a casting agent. The story is about like three guys who are, or four guys, I should say, who are particularly self-absorbed, self-destructive, and very misogynistic, and very kind of caught up in the kind of cocaine ethos of the period in the 80s when it was first... when the play was first produced. I'm wondering if you relate to these characters, if you feel like you know characters like this.
Well, in your description, you know, there's this word that has come up several times about relative to this play having to do with, you know, misogyny. I think that the play makes its own case that it's really not, that it doesn't really reflect the characters, because there's nobody with whom they treat with less respect and or more viciousness than themselves and each other. The men amongst themselves and each other. And I think that there was actually the New York Times review was, I think, a very accurate notion that it's not so much the war between men and women that's dramatized as the war between men and themselves. So I find myself defending the play and the movie on relative to that aspect of it. And also, I find that in playing it, that I don't have find myself running into reflections on that particular sentiment of misogyny. Yet there is clearly a destructive cycle that goes on in them. But again, even the aspect of it that's cocaine is one that I relate much more to in the same way I would think You know, when you look at some old Frank Sinatra movie and everybody's having a drink, I don't think that's a movie about alcoholics any more than this is about drug addicts. This is what is very common is this drug, not only in the 80s, but today I see it around, you know, just as much as I ever did in these settings. And it's a kind of certainly a dialogue inducer, but I don't think that it dictates the drama.
You did Hurley Burley on stage and on screen. Did you see your character differently in the interim, you know, 12 years after you first played him?
I don't know that I could articulate the ways in which I saw it differently, but I could say that with any good writing, there's an ongoing experience where you keep sort of discovering new things. Yet this was a movie that we made, you know, with very, very little short funds, and made the whole movie in 30 days. So there wasn't an awful lot of experimenting when it came time to shoot the scenes. We had to be pretty sure of the choices we were going to make and go ahead and do them. We wouldn't be able to have, you know, five takes per setup even to be able to adjust options so much. So in a way, if there was anything most different about the production of the play, where you're consistently trying new things and so on. In this case, major scenes are shot in one day's shooting, and you're pretty much committing to one choice or another.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Sean Penn. He's starring in the new movies Hurley Burley and The Thin Red Line. Your new movie, The Thin Red Line, is a World War II movie set in the South Pacific, and it's about the soldiers who are sent to the South Pacific island of Guadalcanal, which has been taken over by the Japanese. And, you know, the war and all of its machinery and death is set against the beauty of this island and the peaceful nature of the people living there. Would you describe your character in the film?
This is a question that is so much better put to Terry Malick, because the way that he works, this is somebody I have a great admiration and affection for. But the way that he works, I think that if I, it's hard to describe my own participation in any other terms than to sort of give him something that was neutral enough that he could use it to write a character in the cutting room. As we went along, we tried to develop some specific aspects of, you know, what part this character was going to play in telling the story. But we didn't, it was never very clear what the specific arc of that telling was going to be. So scene for scene, it was a different experience than normally you would have, where you sort of graph a character. So I think that, you know, if there's somebody that's behind that, it's Terry much more than me, and he's unreachable for comment, but he's the one to put that to.
I'll try to sum up your character in the movie. Have you seen the movie, by the way?
I have.
You have, okay. I'll try to sum up the character, and I'm always afraid I reduce things to cliche when I do this, but here we go. I mean, it's kind of a classic character in a way, the guy who seems kind of tough and distant, but, you know, would risk his life in a second to save, you know, someone in his company. And then there's this line where someone asks him if he ever gets lonely, and he says something like, only when I'm around other people.
Yeah.
You know, there's some, especially early in the movie, there's a lot of close-ups of faces in the film. And I'm wondering, when you're acting, if you're aware of when you're going to have a tight close-up like that, and if that affects the kind of performance you give for that scene.
Again, I think that really, that varies movie to movie, scene to scene. And I know that there, I can't say for sure whether I'm one of the people that this is true of or not, but I know there's several close-ups in that picture that were, you know, initially in response to something other than what the point of view that was cut into it represents. So you're taking one train of thought that's going on in someone's face and applying it to a new setting, in the editorial process, which is something that Terry may at times be very conscious he's going to do later. I don't really know. Again, he was somebody who I enjoy him partly because there's not an awful lot of chatter you can have about his process because it's not one that he can really talk about. It's something that goes on inside his head. So trying to second guess that stuff would be a mistake. So in the case of this movie, I would say that I don't know that I was particularly conscious of making adjustments based on the size of the frame.
My guest is Sean Penn. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sean Penn. He's starring in the new movie Hurly Burly, set in Hollywood, and The Thin Red Line, set in Guadalcanal in World War II. Did you see a lot of war movies when you were growing up?
I suppose I saw my share. Now, mind you, that means mostly contemporary movies, because most of the older movies, and this goes back to my view of something like, you know, not just war movies, but even, you know, classic films like, you know, Grapes of Wrath and some of these things. I don't like them very much. You know, I don't really find that I respond to them cinematically very much. And that has been true also with some of the older films. And I did see From Here to Eternity, which has some sort of entertaining things in it and all. But I feel like it's packed with cliches, and it's not really the kind of filmmaking I'm interested in. So probably the contemporary films about war have been of more interest to me. I like Sam Fuller's movies.
Right, right. And you've been in two war movies that I can think of, Casualties of War, which is a Vietnam film directed by Brian De Palma, and of course now Thin Red Line. Would you maybe compare for us what the experience of shooting both of those films was like? There were battle scenes in both of those films that you were in. Can you compare the experience of how you were directed or what your sense of being in the midst of battle was in both of those scenes? One's World War II, one's Vietnam.
Well, I think that Brian De Palma, my sense of him as a director is that he has a kind of story he wants to tell, often with composition and camera movement, and he's a very operatic filmmaker, I think, which at times I think is very effective, and at other times I'm not sure that it's the most effective way of working. That was a script I thought was very interesting also, which was also written by David Rabe.
Right, who did Hurly Burly.
Right. And so, in some ways, there was one felt very free on Casualties of War in the sense that if you were standing in the part of the composition that Brian was interested in capturing, from that point on, he wasn't that concerned about what nuances you may bring as an actor to the part. Whereas with Terry, I find that Terry Malick's the director that people look at throughout the day. Trying to find out what part of the journey he's on and how to serve the piece that he's making. So you find yourself observing Terry's search and trying to kind of grasp onto it. But I think the simpler answer to your question is both of the movies were shot in, you know, tropical jungles, and I like tropical jungles a lot.
I'm wondering if it's disorienting to be in a scene with, you know, when there's fighting and bombs or grenades or a lot of gunfire, and the purpose of the scene is in a way to show the confusion of the battlefield. Is it confusing to be an actor in the middle of that?
Well, there's the old story about the actor who gets his first part, and his line is, you know, he's on the hill with the cannons, and the cannons go off, and his line is, "Hark, I hear the cannons roar," and he's practicing it over and over in his trailer, and finally they call him to the set, and action, and the cannon goes off. He says, "What the hell was that?" So, you know, that's out there, but I find that when you know that those things are going to be there, for me, I've always found that those things can really be a barometer of where your attention has to be. And sort of define where your concentration will be. You know, I think that it makes sense for that to be disorienting if this is a soldier in his first battle, or if this is somebody who has not been in the training of that kind of situation. But if you've been around it a lot, as, you know, certainly the characters I played in these pictures had been, then I think that you're really focusing on dealing with it as a danger that's bigger than you can actually deal with. You're a little bit in the hands of something bigger than you are at that point. And so you try to just do your job. I mean, I think that even in a character in a war picture is somebody who has a job, and there is training that goes along with that job, and there are ways that you adjust to situations. I think your focus is on those doing your job out there, doing the job in that case of a soldier, you know.
I'd read that years ago you told Terrence Malick that Terrence Malick hadn't made a movie in 20 years before Thin Red Line, and you had told him at some point that if he ever made a movie again, you'd like to be in it, and that you would do it for a dollar. What was it about his movies that inspired that enthusiasm? And he had made Badlands and Days of Heaven.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was his movies that were among those that I had come to right around the time that cinema, as it were, was starting to interest me anyway. And that they were pivotal in my interest in film, which began as an interest in direction. And they really stuck with me, and I reviewed them over the years. And there was a certain kind of true poetry to the way that he made movies that I thought was so missing in other people's filmmaking, and that he was really important that way. And I found it very inspiring. And so those are the people I think that you support.
He gave up making films for 20 years. Now, you've said in recent interviews that you would like to give up acting. I assume that means that you'd still direct, but you'd just prefer not to.
Yeah, yeah. I love to make movies, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you talked to him about his 20 years of not making movies and got a sense of what his experience not making movies was like, and if that affected your thoughts on not acting.
Well, I mean, I take Terry at his word when he describes it as he forgot to make a movie. So he remembered he made movies, and he came back and he made ones.
He really sounds like a character.
He's a very interesting man.
So tell me more about why you want to stop acting. And I mean, I've been reading about this in recent articles about you.
I just don't enjoy it.
Is it because other people are controlling the whole film and you're just an actor in it, or is it that you don't like acting?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I mean, you know, one of the things, the most important thing I could share with you about it, I think, is something that I'm not going to be the only one to face. I mean, audiences have already paying the price of the fact that the things that one would act in are by and large so compromised by the time they are made. And they're compromised by the actors who do them, and they're compromised by the directors, and they're compromised by the writers. And some of it I understand, and some of it I blame them for. You know, there's a self-imposed censorship that happens when people write, and they are aware of what studios will finance and what they won't finance. Those who write take on what they like to consider as the courageous subjects. There are ways to dramatize courageous subjects that make them cowardly. And that's by and large the way that important issues are addressed by filmmakers today. They find a way to soften them. They find a way to allow an audience to be comfortable. And I think that whenever it was that filmmaking became the art of massage, is when I got less and less interested in participating in it as an actor. So that's where material has been a key to me not being interested. It's just not there. And rare is the day that you get something and you usually don't get paid well to do it, because you have to really fight to get it done. And I've had a long history of those, and it beats you up. And I think the way that critics do not look past those, I think critics think very much like studios do. I would venture to say that I can't think of a critic who I have any feelings of support for. Those who have ever said anything good about me, that I might appreciate at one moment, come out the next minute and say something so ridiculous about something, or are so unsupportive of someone's terrific piece of work somewhere along the line. You said then these people have no real grounded notion of what it is that their job is, and that's very frustrating. So the whole world of film today has become, you know, when I grew up watching films, I think in the 70s were probably the last time one could say that of the 10 most successful pictures that came out each year, 8 of them were probably the best films that came out that year. Now, of the 10 most successful films, none of them are among the 10 best. That distance has grown and grown, and I just feel that I can do what I want to do much more directly as a writer and as a director.
Well, let me ask you, I this is in a way asking you to play film critic for a moment, but since your most recent movie is a film set during World War II, I'm wondering if you saw Saving Private Ryan, which is one of the most commercially and critically successful films of the year and probably won a whole lot of Academy Awards. Do you think that was a good film?
Let me not talk specifically about Saving Private Ryan, but there is one contribution that I would like to make to the ridiculous world of films' self-acknowledgement with awards. I think they should have an award every year for best half movie of the year.
Why?
Because I think there are a lot of filmmakers that are capable of, since have very skillful and maybe even artful at times, who do not trust audiences, do not trust their material enough to tell something truly from start to finish. And so what they do in an extraordinary fashion is betrayed by the pandering of the rest of the storytelling.
I'd like to start giving an award for best performances in mediocre or formulaic movies, because I find that there's a lot of really terrific performances in movies that are not really worthy of the actors who are in them.
Yeah, that's true too.
So do you get sent a lot of scripts and you think this is dreck?
Yes.
My guest is Sean Penn. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sean Penn. He's starring in the new movies Hurly Burly and The Thin Red Line. I want to ask you a question about President Clinton and about the way his relationship with Monica Lewinsky has been handled. I know that the people opposing him would make the case that this is about perjury and it's not about sex, but nevertheless, no matter which side of the fence you're on, it's quite clear that a sexual relationship has been made very, very public in his life. You are a celebrity, a Hollywood star, whose personal life has been the subject of a lot of press. You had paparazzi who were nearly stalking you for quite a while. And I'm wondering, as someone who has probably felt much more exposed than you wanted to be and much more under surveillance than you wanted to be, if that's affecting your perception of President Clinton's story.
Well, I, you know, clearly I wouldn't be able to tell you how I would feel if I hadn't had those experiences, but I'd like to think that it would be the way that I feel without, you know, with having had them. You know, I think what's interesting about it to me is it's such a, is that in the way that the support continues for him despite it, the thing that I think is most, that I'm most optimistic about because of that is that we still seem as a culture to finally want at the end of the day most to celebrate survival. And anybody who can stand there and take the punches that this guy has taken, forget about whether you believe in his policy, forget if you think that a president is or isn't an ineffectual pawn of multinational corporate interest anymore. If he's nothing else, he's a symbol of incredible resilience. And I think that that's very good for this country.
Sean Penn, the last time we did an interview, you had to leave the Los Angeles studio because it's a no-smoking studio. So we ended up doing it by phone from your place, which is how we're doing it today as well. You still smoking?
I have let my daughter know that I'll be quitting.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Is she old enough to pressure you? Or?
Oh, yeah. They turn them into little anarchists at schools now.
So what?
Encourage them to throw your packs in the sink and put water in them and throw them in the trash bin.
All of that.
So what strategy are you going to do? That thing where you moisten the cigarettes in the sink and then you. I remember there was a time when people used to carry around jars with cigarette stubs in it, and when they got the urge to smoke, they were supposed to open up the jar and inhale all the old cigarette stubs in the hopes that that would nauseate them.
Well, you're nauseating me just bringing it up.
So what's your technique going to be?
Cold turkey.
Cold turkey. Well, I wish you luck with it.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for talking with us about your new movies.
You bet.
Sean Penn is starring in The Thin Red Line and Hurley Burley. He'll play a jazz musician in Woody Allen's next film.